it changed my whole life. So that's how I originally got to the island.
Hmm. So when you said you had hitchhiked, where did you hitchhike from to get to California? I didn't hear that.
From Aspen, Colorado. I mean, not knowing, you know, ignorance is bliss. I stuck out my thumb, and so many crazy stories on that trip alone, you know. I mean, it was just wild going into L.A. and then all the way up the coast. The West Coast editor of Penthouse Magazine, there was this, I'm standing on a freeway near El Tron, just outside of L.A., and it's about 20 lanes across. You know how big the freeways are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I see this Porsche, 911, a black Porsche with, you know, smoky windows. It keeps moving over lane by lane. And this thing, like a jet airplane, you know, slows down and pulls over onto the shoulder. And the black smoky window goes down. And there's this beautiful babe in, like, this miniskirt driving this, you know, fantasy car. And she goes, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Well, I'm trying to get to L.A. And she said, "Hop in." It turns out she was a West Coast editor of Penthouse Magazine, stayed at her place for a couple days. Bob Guccione, remember him, the editor of the Penthouse during the heyday and all that. All the pictures of Bob and the Penthouse pets were on the wall. And she just gave me so much great advice about being a writer. And, you know, but I would meet people like that by sticking the thumb out and taking that journey.
Wow. So, we'll hear some noise in the background. So, when you met this young lady, that wasn't the did you meet another young lady before you met her, though, right?
You mean the one I married, or?
Well, you spoke of a young lady that you met. And then you're speaking of this young lady. So you already spoke of the one that you married.
No, the one that I married came later.
Oh, so okay. So these were other...
The architect from Canada was the one that got me to the island. And then no dates for 2 years. I wrote my first book, Inside Passage, Living with Bald Eagles, Killer Whales, Quaquito Indians. And, you know, I didn't know anything about the writing game. And like a fool, I wrote the book. I didn't have an agent. I didn't know how a book got published. But I mailed it to HarperCollins, which is one of the biggest publishers in the world in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And it sat there in the slush pile. You know, when a publisher receives unsolicited manuscripts, they usually throw them in a garbage can.
But right.
For some reason, there was a stack of them on a desk, and an editor wanted to amuse himself while he was having his sandwich, his lunch at his desk. And why he picked mine out of the pile and, you know, read it. And I got very, very lucky to publish a first book with, you know, a big house like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Helen Gurley Brown, who died about a year and a half ago, took a little magazine called Cosmopolitan when it was going nowhere. And during her career as editor-in-chief of Cosmopolitan, it became the biggest women's selling magazine around the world, translated into 87 languages, published in 100 countries. And every month they put a single guy in there, Bachelor of the Month, that women can write to. Well, my editor, HarperCollins, sent a picture over to Helen Gurley Brown of this new author, and I don't know why to this day, you know, why she picked me, but I was Mr. November. And when I left the wilderness to come back to publish my book, there were thousands of letters, perfumed. All the eyes were dotted with hearts, purple and pink ink, lingerie, naked pictures. It was every man's fantasy.
Wow.
It was like the master of the universe said, "Hey, kid, the female candy shop is open. Walk in. The lids are off all the jars. Help yourself to as many flavors for as long as you want." I mean, it was unreal. So my agent at the time
said, "This was all because of Cosmopolitan."
Yeah, I mean, the power of that magazine, for them to put their stamp of approval on you, And the picture, I'm kneeling on one knee, and a sled dog is kissing my face. So I guess if a dog likes this guy, maybe a few girls will, you know. But, I mean, it was the craziest ride of my life. But a literary agent at that time said, dude, Sigmund Freud once asked what the women really want. You got a shot at finding out. Why don't you take notes? And why don't you study these women like you studied the wildlife in Alaska? So that's the name of the book, Wild Life, meaning the life is wild, but also meaning the women were wild. You know?
Wow. So this is what had made you write the book because of Cosmopolitan.
Yeah, that's my latest book that's out right now. And, I mean, there were so many crazy dates. I mean, you couldn't even make some of this stuff up. It was just I didn't get any sleep. You know, I couldn't pay my bills. I wasn't getting any writing done or work done. It was like, in fact, one of the chapters in the book is called Sugar Shock because it was like eating dessert every hour, you know.
Wow.
And
so
I mean, you didn't have to do anything. You didn't have to work for it. It's like these women were just, you know, coming after you because you were in that magazine. It was the craziest thing.
How many women were you involved with at that particular time?
Well, the letters would just pour in like every day, you know, and it was too overwhelming for me. And at first I didn't want to do it. I said no to Cosmopolitan, and my editor yelled at me and said, Michael, you can't buy that kind of publicity. You know, for a first-time author, this is outrageous. They're going to mention the title of your book and your blurb that goes with your picture in Cosmo. So you got to do it. But I wanted to be taken serious as a biologist, you know, and an adventurer with my first book. So finally I agreed. And every day it'd be like another 100 letters would pour out of the, you know, the P.O. box. And all of my buddies took control in the den of a house. We called it Mission Control. One guy would answer the door every day when the presents were coming. Flowers, and somebody else did all the emails, and somebody else took care of the faxes, and they were the ones that sent me out on the dates. They were the ones that screened the girls and said, okay, you're going to go out with this one, and you know, but of those 5,000 letters, I probably dated a bit over 100, but
wow.
I mean, from every cross-section, every race, it was just a phenomenal education. You know, to learn about women. I mean, because this one woman told me, men know how to tune up a car, but they don't know the first thing about turning on a woman. You want to learn, you know? And I mean, I was hearing it all. It was just outrageous.
Wow. So was your wife among those 100 women?
Well, I dated my way down a couple mailbags. And after a couple years of, you know, just dating, having the time of my life, I picked up this letter. And after I read it, the picture was not naked shot. It was kind of a faraway shot. But when I finished reading that letter, I said, I'm going to marry this girl.
Wow, that's very impressive.
Oprah, we were on Oprah Winfrey Show twice, and Oprah asked me, you know, live in front of 400 million people, it's a wonder you can even talk. I was so nervous. And she goes, Michael, you know how Oprah is. And she goes, you got 5,000 letters from women around the world. How the heck did you pick Paula? You know, and it was easy because a lot of the letters, there's this horrible fairy tale that I hope that girls don't get read anymore, but they used to. It was called Rapunzel, about a girl being helpless in a tower, waiting for a man to come along and rescue her, to save her. And a lot of the mail I was getting was, oh, please come with your dog team from Alaska and take me out of my little small town or the problems I have in my life or whatever. So a lot of it was kind of that Rapunzel rescue me thing. But Paula's letter was almost a resume of all of her accomplishments in life. And in between the words was the message, hey, buddy, I don't really need you. If you want strength meeting strength, call me up. But I have learned that a lot of men run from those kind of women because they want to dominate a woman. you know. But my father taught me that if you want to learn how to play tennis, don't play with somebody you beat on the court. Play with somebody that runs your butt all over the place, you know. And Paula is just like this Wonder Woman. So I flew to Phoenix, Arizona on Christmas Eve to meet her, and boom, we just, it was like an explosion went off. We just clicked like it was predetermined.
Wow. That is really something.
But
you know,
I'm glad that I had years of dating these other women before I met Paula, because when I met her, I could apply everything that the other girls had taught me, you know, from all these various countries. Yeah, she kind of got the benefit of me learning on the job, so to speak, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good thing.
It was amazing. So I did take notes, like Michael Larson, the literary agent, said. And, you know, it's just a crazy book. And one Sunday, I got to give you the wildest kind of crazy thing that happened. One Sunday night, the phone rang, and it's a collect call from a prison in Florida. And, you know, being a writer and very curious, I said, sure, to the operator. I said, I'll accept the charges. And I go, hello. And this voice goes, Michael, is this really you? And I go, yeah, it's me. And she goes, hi, I'm Dolores. I'm in a federal penitentiary. And you probably don't want to talk to me. And I go, hey, listen, sometimes, you know, bad things happen to good people. Mm-hmm. By the way, what are you in for? You know, what's your challenge or your crime? And she said, third-degree murder.
Mm.
So I went, oh. And she goes, I must tell you something. She says, it gets so hot and humid in this prison in Florida that sometimes it almost rains inside the jail. But the other day, I'm walking to the exercise yard, and I'm going down the hallway with, you know, girls to the right and left in their cells, and I see your Cosmo picture on just about everybody's wall. Somebody ran it off on the copy machine because you're the symbol of freedom to us. You're playing with your dogs in the snow, and, you know, you're famous in this jail. And she says, by the way, I get out. I'm released in a few months. And I need a boyfriend bad.
Wow.
I mean, this was the craziness, you know. This was
wow.
Just,
you get all kinds, though, you know, because
yeah. And then I would get these letters from Dolly, you know, from the Cayman Islands in the Caribbean. And in fact, sometimes she would call me, and I don't know how they got my number, but they could track you down anywhere now, you know. And Dolly from the Cayman Islands, she said, don't you be dating those stick bitches, those white girls. You must come to the islands and learn what real loving is all about. Yeah, and I'm going, this is what happened in my life, living alone on the island, you know. I mean, no, you can't complain. But, you know, my dad and my brothers, they went nuts. Because one time at Christmas, my dad said, Michael, put some of those letters into a duffel bag. And when you come over for Christmas and the girls are all cooking in the kitchen, all the boys, we're going to go out in the garage and we're going to, like, look through your letters and stuff. So it was nuts. I mean, it's kind of like every man's fantasy, you know, to collect a harem, to have this kind of diversity. But the crazy thing was is you just didn't have to do anything. It was like being famous for 15 minutes, as Andy Warhol once said. It was kind of like the rock star life for a while, where it was easy street. You know, the girls came to you. I mean, it was like CEOs of companies. It was truck drivers. It was, you name the occupation. But I just learned more about the cross-section of female, you know, not only Americana, but all over the world. You know, but it was like making love in limos in Toronto. And I'm going, wait a minute. Are you sure that all the traffic around us can't see through these windows and what we're doing right now? And, you know, the weirdest thing happened. You know, I was raised as a Catholic boy in Cleveland. And we're in this limo. And I'm doing the wild thing 10 minutes after meeting this president of a company. And she said she... You know, she even admitted, she said, you're my chew toy. just like a dog, like would have like a chew toy. I mean, she just attacked me, you know. And at one point, I laughed and I said, "Hey, I need a little romance here. Slow down, you know." But we're going at it in this limo. It stops at a red light, and there's this boy, about 8 years old, and he is staring almost like he could see through that window. You know, I mean, it was like this piercing gaze of this little boy, but he looked just like I did when I was 8 years old. He had the buzz cut and the big blue eyes, and it was like my former self looking at me, my conscience going, "What is happening to you? What is becoming of your life?" You know, there was a flashpoint moment where seeing that boy in the car next to me while I'm shagging the CEO in a limo, it really got me to question, like, hey, you know, what is this all about? Has it really gone too far? You know?
Well, one thing I can say is you had to organize. You had your friends doing the emails and picking out the girl for you to date. So, you know, even though I know it was overwhelming for you too, because, you know, just all of a sudden you're put in the spotlight like that, you know, being an overnight sensation, celebrity, you know, and to have all those women coming after you like that. But all of them had the same thing in common. They wanted to be rescued except for your wife. And, you know, for you to recognize that and pick out the right one was a good thing too, because you could have well picked out the murderer.
Been proven over and over that guys are attracted visually, you know, that we are dominated. And I mean, women, you guys are just so, it's not fair. I mean,
yes,
the female form is so goddess. It has the divinity in it. You know, the curve of a woman's hip is like where God lives herself. That line is just, look at the twerking and Kim Kardashian. And I mean, it just, it mesmerizes a man. So I did have my male moments where I, you know, went after the bimbos. In fact, my first wild date was a body double from Hollywood. She was an actress. And like when you see, you know, a Hollywood actress, a big named actress, Julia Roberts, who used to be, but you know, today, I mean, other than Kim, but even Kim is Photoshopped sometimes. But nine times out of ten, it isn't the actress herself in the shower. It's for 3 seconds they bring in a body double.
Right.
And Shireen made $250,000 a year because she had the best butt in the business. And she would step in just for close-ups, 2-3 seconds of her butt, and then they would, you know, cut away, and then you'd see Julia Roberts or the other actress stepping out of the shower. So this is my first date, you know. So I was very male for a while, and then I got to a point where I said, you know, this just doesn't have any substance. It doesn't have any meaning. And all my buddies are going, no, we got this porn star for you to go out with next. And at one point, I said, no, guys, I'm not listening to you anymore. I go, what's that stack of letters over there on the table? And they go, oh, that's the reject pile. And I go, give me those letters. I'm taking them home, and I'm going to look through, and I'm going to try to figure out why you guys reject it. I hope it isn't just because of looks. I hope that's not the only reason. Or we're going to, you know, have some words between us. And a lot of it was because, you know, they're guys, and they judge superficially. But I dated quite a few of those girls that were in that reject pile. And I learned something about myself, that I can get just as excited having an in conversation. I call it mind melt. When you talk to a woman and the world disappears around you and you just connect mentally with a conversation, and you're almost outside the time-space continuum because you just link up mentally, spiritually. And I had a few of those from the reject pile, and I walked away going, wait a minute, you know, that was as exciting in a different way, but just as exciting as having sex. To be able to have a conversation with a human being that deep and full of substance and knowledge and learning new things.
Right.
You know, so many, many lessons came, and a lot of it came from the, quote, reject pile, you know.
Wow. That is really something. Well, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to continue with our conversation.
You're listening to Bringing Sexy Back, right here on Delicious Talk Radio. There is no religion or politics spoken here, only delicious adult conversation. Audience participation is encouraged, so log in and create an account to engage in conversation in our chat room. Feel free to call in with your questions and comments at 646-652-2877. That's 646-652-2877. And let's get this delicious talk conversation going.
One for me.